Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and welcome to Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, joined today by Liz Freemuth and Brian Huddleston. Liz provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe, and Brian directs the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison, so it's always great to have them along. Liz, thank you for coming by.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And Brian, great to see you again.
Good to see you, too. Thanks for having me.
Well, I tell you what, we'll have plenty of questions here. We want to talk about a little bit about, have you looked in the crystal ball for diseases that may be coming up for the coming year?
Yeah, I always tell folks
his crystal ball has kind of a black edge around it, but yeah.
Yeah, I usually tell folks that if I was good at predicting diseases, I wouldn't be here right now. I'd be off on a beach having won that lottery thing, huge jackpot earlier this month. So,
well, this is a time, and I actually have a photo. I'll get it up on our Facebook page. With a question about pruning, and this is a good time for pruning, isn't it?
We're getting there, and right now the air is very dry, very, very dry. So if you can pick a day that's comfortable for you, yeah, you can get out there and you can get started on your winter pruning, definitely. Like a nice kind of dry air day so that the cells close very, very quickly, and right now we don't have insects active, and diseases
and
are kind of sitting
warmer,
and waiting.
So you don't have to worry about freezing to death while you're pruning.
Right. I like that part.
Yes, indeed.
Well, Mark sent a photo on our Facebook page of his rose bushes.
Oh, my goodness.
and
I love it. That's really
says,
nice.
How should I trim my rose bushes?
It really depends on the rose. That one looks like a bit of a rambler. And generally with those, what I do is I wait until spring because we do have quite a bit of winter going yet, and we don't know how much is going to get taken off. And so if you cut it back now and we get a hard freeze and we get some horrible, horrible weather, it'll die back even further. So I just let it go until the stems start to green up slightly, and then take it back to about 8. That one I think you could easily take back to about 18 inches, 20 inches from the ground, and just give it a hedge clip. And yeah, that should be fine with that.
Great to have those photos. If you have a photo of maybe a plant that has some sort of disease issue, or maybe you want to identify a plant, or as with Mark here, just to show us the rose bush, go to our Facebook page. It's mm-hmm. The Larry Mueller Show. You can post your photos there. And if you don't have a photo, you can post your question there as well. Also, call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Lee in Green Bay has a question, so let's go there right off the bat. Hi, Lee. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. This question would be for Brian. I have their older pines. There's a stand of them that are maybe 1.5 to 2 acres that run down. White pines, Norway pines, Scotch pines.
Okay.
Approximate diameter of the trunks, 10 inches, let's say. You know, they're older trees.
Mm-hmm.
My Scotch pines, especially now the bottom branches I've noticed the last year or so, needle cast, they're losing their needles like really bad.
Yeah, do you see any evidence on those needles that it's primarily at the tip where you're seeing the browning?
If it's what?
Primarily at the tip of the needles where you're seeing the browning?
I'd have to look again, but I mean, all the needles are falling right off.
Yeah, there is
some of the bottom are just like there. You know, there's just nothing there.
Yeah, sometimes if you've got a really dense stand of trees, some of it can be shading that will induce some needle loss. There is a disease on Scots pine called brown spot, and it's a fungal disease. It typically will start on the lower branches because that's where it's a little bit more moist. And in terms of large trees like that, there's not a lot you can do that's inexpensive. You could certainly have someone come in and spray some sort of preventative fungicide to protect the needles farther up the tree, but that oftentimes gets very, very expensive, particularly in a grove. How denuded are the trees in general, or is it just primarily you're seeing more of an aesthetic issue on the bottom branches?
More aesthetic on the bottom branches, but I can see there were even a few that were set off from the stand where they mm-hmm. have more light, and they're maybe only 3, 4, 5 inches in diameter.
Okay.
Now they're even doing it. You know.
Yeah.
How much distance are between your trees? Are they fairly close together?
Yeah, fairly close together. What I might do eventually now is I might take the chainsaw and start thinning.
Yeah, thinning would be a good idea as well.
I think so, especially when you're talking about a large amount of trees, because the cost is going to be tremendous to have those sprayed, and that's going to have to be more than once.
I usually don't even do that with that sort of grove of trees. It just doesn't make sense. Now, if you have a single tree that's kind of a focal point in your landscape and it's showing the start of some symptoms, then you could consider fungicide treatments for that, a broad spectrum fungicide, something that contains something called chlorothalonil. That's a very broad spectrum fungicide. You do have to treat it as a preventative, and you need to get it on the healthy looking needles to prevent them from being infected. And it is a multiple application, usually per year and usually every year. So you really need to make a decision about whether you want to put that much investment of time, effort, and money into those trees.
There we go. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Lee. Appreciate your call. And Patrick in Wisconsin Rapids has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Patrick. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for the good program. I have a young magnolia. I think it's a Japanese magnolia tree. It's about 14 feet tall now, and it's probably about 10, 11 years old. Anyway, there's a couple of lower branches on there that just get in my way when I'm mowing. and I love this girl is mine. And would it be a safe time to trim them now?
You can trim. Magnolias are actually pretty tough. You can trim them almost any time, but they are early spring bloomers. So if you're looking at removing those branches to get out of the way of the mower, I actually would wait until after they bloom. Enjoy the blooms one more time, and then take the saw to them and cut the branches off.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
okay.
Just enjoy it. It's your baby. Yeah. Enjoy it as long as possible, and then you don't have to feel bad about cutting those branches off.
The other thing I would recommend before you prune off those branches, your saw, your pruning shears, whatever you use, I would decontaminate them just in case you've picked up something when you've pruned other trees. Magnolias are very susceptible to a fungal disease called verticillium wilt, and if you've happened to have pruned something else with that disease, I'd hate for you to infect your magnolia, and that fungus can survive for a while. So 70% alcohol, something like rubbing alcohol, would work really good. Some of the spray disinfectants, just spray it until it drips. That'll work quite well, too. So I routinely recommend that when you're doing pruning, as you go from tree to tree, decontaminate tools so you don't spread things around.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Patrick, for calling. And Jill in New Berlin up next. Hi, Jill. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I just had a question that's not typical of Wisconsin, but I have...
Oh, right up my alley. Go for it. I love these.
Well, I have a lemon tree that I grew from a seed from about 35 years ago, and it's about 10 feet tall now. Mm-hmm. And I have a couple questions. Usually it drops off, you know, dried leaves during the winter, but in the last week it started dropping off quite a large volume of healthy leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And my second question is, it's getting to the point, I take it out in the summer and bring it in in the winter, but it's getting so large that in another year I probably won't be able to do that. It has a main trunk, and then it has a branch coming off to the side about a foot up, I guess, and I'm thinking about taking that second branch off. Is there a particular time of the year I should be doing that?
Let me ask you a few questions first. Does it produce fruit for you?
No.
Okay, so this is mainly decorative then for you?
Right.
Okay. There are a couple of things that you can do. Number one, I don't worry about citrus trees when they drop their leaves in a house setting at any time of the winter. I don't worry about that. It's getting old enough that if it was at all going to produce some blooms for you, we're starting to come up to that now. We can get late fall in an extended, like, greenhouse, kind of cold greenhouse situation in November, December. But otherwise, I start to see those starting to bloom now and then through about March or so. But what I have noticed with some of the ones that I take care of is that if they drop their leaves, sometimes what you'll see is you'll see blooms pop up after that. Lemon trees are really, really tough, and you can hack and whack on that as much as you want. And
really?
And it will come back beautifully. And what I would suggest to you, if you want to keep this going in and out of the house, is rather than continue to increase the size of the pot, pull the whole thing out of the pot, trim the roots. You know, and disinfect so that you're not bringing anything in, as Brian had said before, on your equipment. But then just cut the roots. And, you know, if you're noticing that anything is brown and unhealthy, smells bad, then you'll want to send some samples up to Brian in the lab to make sure that you get it treated. So when the leaves drop, you know, if the roots look good, that's A-okay. If they look bad, you may have a little root rot going in that pot. And then you need to have a specific product recommendation in order to get that appropriately treated. But you can hack and whack on those roots and put it back in the pot. I would knock off the old soil and give it a nice dose of new soil. It likes nice loose. And then are you fertilizing with citrus fertilizer?
I usually do in the spring,
Yeah, if you're growing them in the house, you can actually do a low dose. You can treat them a little bit better than what you treat your house plants, so you don't have to ignore them from October through because you're trying to keep those leaves. Then you also may want to increase the humidity slightly by putting a tray of rocks and water underneath the pot so that you get area humidity, so that you get that water evaporating up onto the leaves. Right now, it's so super dry that it doesn't surprise me that leaves dropped.
No, not at all. Don't let the pot sit in the water so it absorbs the water, because that will make root rots more likely.
Yeah, and you just want the, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it should, your pot should have a tray underneath it and set that into the rock so that there is no water coming up into the pot. It's just going to evaporate around and hit the leaves as it evaporates.
There you go. Good luck, Jill. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Limey, my lime tree, has lost a lot of her leaves.
They look horrible in the house during winter. They do.
But then she starts making some new leaves now.
And Limey produces quite a few limes for you, too, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No shortage of limes in our house.
Excellent. Makes excellent marmalade.
I haven't tried that. No. I haven't tried that. I guess she's got three or four limes on her right now, and one of the cats is looking longingly. You know what?
There are worse things for cats to eat.
I should ask you. I have used always a fish emulsion fertilizer. That's all. You know, it's a liquid thing. Mm-hmm. I throw it in with the water every time I water. And that's about every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. I actually recommend that, I mean, you can use that. It seems to be working for you, so wonderful. But I actually recommend people go and get fertilizer specifically made for what they're growing. So there are citrus fertilizers out there so that you get exactly what it is that you need. Because there are definitely differences for us. We've got super high pH. And so you really want something that's a little bit more acidic than what we have in our water and things like that. So, you know, same thing for tomatoes, roses. Go and get something that's specifically made for it. And then make sure you get a test done once in a while. Even on limey, you might want to send a soil sample in to see what you need to be doing for your tree, especially because you love it. And
Limey
it
has to go to a bigger pot this spring.
Or if you keep it the same, you can hack and whack on the roots and pop it back in. You know,
yeah, that's the other way to do it. Well, Limey's pretty small to begin with.
So he can grow a little bit? Or she, I guess.
It's a bear's lime, and they don't get very big to be 3 feet, maybe. Yeah. Arlene in New Berlin has a question. Hi, Arlene.
Morning. Thank you for having this show today. I'm at my wit's end, I guess.
Okay. What can we do for you?
I have trees on the southwest corner of my property. I have a half acre of land, but not all in the back. I have 1, 2, 3 Colorado blue spruces, and they're kind of staggered, but they're a little close. The middle one is a little closer. Next to the third one, there is a Norway spruce, but I'm not sure. It's full at the bottom. It's got acorns that are hanging on the end of the branches. And if I look up at the top, which is as tall as my electrical lines, if there are acorns or what those brown things are, some kind of cone-like.
Pine cones, yeah.
Pine cones, mm-hmm.
All
or spruce
on the
cones.
Spruce cones, yeah.
Now, there's another tree next to it. I think it's a green evergreen. It's not quite as tall, and it's nice and full. Should I take that one tree out, seeing as I've got all those cones on there and no leaves at the top?
I don't actually worry about that, and unless you're dying to cut the tree out for some other reason. Just because it has no needles at the top, that actually might have been a new spurt of growth, you know, without seeing it throughout the season.
It's thinner at the top than it is at the base.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, because if it's right. if it's still growing from the top, you actually may see more cone development up there than you will needles. This spring, you might actually see some needles pop out. So unless you're in a really big hurry to do it, I would actually wait to see what happens in spring. You
now,
know?
Should I have those cones taken off?
No. You'll do more damage to the tree than, and quite frankly, that's part of the natural growth of the tree, so I would just leave them there.
Yeah.
It really, I mean, when we did some landscaping, we had somebody put in the trees for us, and it's kind of like a screen for my neighbor corner from me, and I'm putting in giant Technia arborvitas in the back because we took some tree line out, which were shrub bushes, and I'm instead of putting up a nice fence, I'm going to put up four giant Technia arborvitas. And I'm going to stagger them so they don't get needle drop.
Oh, that's nice. That'll look nice. I like that better than a fence. But I wouldn't worry about excess cones on any of the trees.
No.
You know, sometimes that's just a an environmental response, and sometimes it's just the tree decided that, yeehaw,
it's,
this
it's
is the year
old
I'm,
enough.
Yeah,
it's ready to reproduce.
There
so
we go.
That's part of the natural biology of the tree. So I wouldn't
don't
worry
about
that at
all. And you know, there are birds that actually like to peck at the seeds and stuff on those things. So let them go.
Let them go, Arlene. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today with Liz Freemuth and Brian Huddleston. Liz has her own business, The Garden Hole. Brian directs the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and UW Extension. I'm Larry Mueller. Brianne Chasso, our on-air producer for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking today with Brian Huddleston and Liz Freemuth today on Garden Talk, and so we're dealing with a whole broad range of things. We're taking a look at plant diseases. We're taking a look at pruning and plant care this time of the year. Join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and that'll be the place if you have a photo you want us to identify something. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and post there. Brianna in Madison emailed us, and her flower beds get overrun with weeds, dandelions, tree seedlings every year. She mulches every other year. Last year was a mulch year. She's heard of but never used Milorganite. Is that something she could apply after her flowers and other plants start coming up, or is there something else you recommend?
You know, I don't really recommend fertilizer unless I'm familiar with the site and what people are doing. If she's been applying mulch, kind of depends on what sort of mulch has been applied. She may actually be getting nutrients, enough nutrients through that without having to apply any other fertilizer. My recommendation would be that get out there and get a soil sample as soon as you can, and you might actually even be able to do it now, because in some areas, if it was close to a house, the ground other than the top couple inches may have been covered with enough snow to not be frozen solid. So she might want to get out and get a sample sent up, have it tested, and see where she's at for nutrient need, and might be that she's fine. Might be that she can apply. Milorganite is a good kind of general purpose nitrogen fertilizer.
Yeah, and as you were saying, I think, Brian, that it can keep the deer away.
Yeah, I said that's definitely off label. But the deer do not like the smell of Milorganite, and we use that to kind of help ward deer off of areas where they're bedding so that they stay out of yards. And it only lasts as long as the Milorganite stays on the ground.
Yeah.
So you do have to apply frequently, but again, that's a very specific thing, and it's not labeled for deer resistance.
That sort of thing. Okay. Mike in Heartland has a... Oops, I'm sorry. We'll go to Susan in Milwaukee, then to Mike in Heartland. Susan, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I grew a hawthorn apple tree from the seed, and it's about 2 feet high right now. I would like to know how to plant it out and if it requires a certain kind of soil. I understand hawthorn apples are part of the rose family. Should I be giving it a rose fertilizer or anything like that? It's in a cold room that I have in my house right now, and it seems to be just absolutely beautiful.
And you said you grew this from seed?
Yeah.
And where did you get your seed from?
There are hawthorn apples all over the place that grow in Milwaukee. And
okay, so are you talking about an edible apple, or are you talking about...
Yeah, it's edible.
Okay, the interesting thing with apples is that each seed is its own animal. All apples are basically hybrids of one sort or another. You can vegetatively propagate to get the same tree that you had. But by seed, it's going to be whatever you get. So if you've got a 2-foot tree and you're liking the way it looks, I would say go ahead and plant it outside in the spring, but you may not actually get the apple that you're expecting. You might get one that's fantastic, but don't expect to get the exact apple that you got the seed from, unfortunately, because all apples are hybrids.
Okay, and...
And transferring it, just wait until the soil warms up. You're going to have to acclimate that little baby to being outside. So when the weather gets up to about 50 degrees, and apples are quite hardy, so you could probably go in the 40s, you move that pot in and out, start in not full sun, especially during the winter, you'll burn the leaves off, but move it in and out like you would a houseplant to move it outside, and gradually just get it used to being there, and then when the soil warms up a little bit and things start to green slightly, then pop it in the ground and away you go. You know, make sure the hole is very well prepared.
Yeah, and I would make sure that you remove soil at the top of that pot until you get to what's called the root flare. So you'll see a section of the trunk that starts to widen out to form the root system. Uh-huh. And you want to have that at the soil line. And then the other thing just to keep in mind, because of the comments that Liz made about when you grow apples from seed, you don't quite know how big that tree is going to be. So if you got it from a tree that you thought was a dwarf, a lot of apples are grafted too. So they're actually grafted onto a root system that keeps them from getting very big. So this particular tree, since it's grown from seed, could get very large. So just be aware of that.
I think it will be very large.
Accordingly. Yeah.
Yeah. And also,
the tree that I got it off of is like about 3 stories high.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So you're aware
expecting,
of it.
You're expecting a big one, right?
It's just those folks who take it from a small tree and then expect it to stay small that I have to warn them about. The other thing to keep in mind is that it may not be very disease resistant either. So you may have a lot of problems with leaf loss. I don't know for certain. I can't say for sure.
You know, and that's the biggest thing is we're kind of guessing, and it's going to be interesting to see
what
your
you
tree
actually
does.
See. Yeah.
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 Follow up with this
really
and tell
cool
us what it looks
stuff
like. Yeah.
From growing stuff from seed. It's just
absolutely.
That
you don't know who dad is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know mom, but you don't know who dad is.
Yeah, and you don't know how strong mom is, so you don't know if it's grandma coming through or if it's, you don't. So I would be really fascinated to hear how your tree does as it goes by.
Susan, you're going to have to call us every, six
every
months or so.
And give us an update.
Give us an update. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, that'd be kind of fun to follow.
I think that's fabulous.
Take a photo now when it starts in the spring. Take a photo and put it up on our Facebook page, and then every 6 months, give us another photo.
I think that's a fantastic project.
Kathy in Menominee Falls, thank you for calling. Hello.
Good morning, Larry and guests. I have overwintered an annual hibiscus. I've done it before and got them to rebloom, but the conditions were much different than I have now. It's in my basement. It's very cold in the basement. It's still alive. It's maybe 2 feet tall. I do have green leaves yet, maybe from the tip of the leaves down maybe 5 or 6 inches. I would like to know if I can cut it back. What do I use to fertilize it to get it re-blooming when I want to take it back outside? And I'll listen to my answer off the air.
Hibiscus are absolutely fabulous because they're what I like to call a hack and whack, which means you can cut it at almost any time and it will respond beautifully. I have a whole selection of hack and whacks for those of us who have not enough time. They actually will bloom on old and new wood, so you're actually okay. The tropicals can be a little bit touchier with insect issues. They like pH that's a little bit lower than what we have. I would actually look for, if you can find a tropical flower fertilizer, that would be fantastic, or just go with a flowering plant fertilizer, and that will get you going. And I would say with that one, in the past, when have you started taking it outside?
She was going off.
Oh, sure. She's gone.
Oh, yeah. She's gone. Okay, I'm going to guess because it's tropical. You really don't want to start taking it outside until you get to 50 degrees. And then you, like any other houseplant, so you move it in and out and fertilize it, and she should be good to go. Yep, it's really pretty easy.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Steve in Menominee Falls up next. Hi, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Last summer, I planted two dwarf crabapple trees in my side yard, and they've taken on really well to the soil. But I noticed this winter, as the leaves fell off, there were two really spiky shoots, limbs that have spiked up about a foot and a half taller than the rest of the tree. And I'm wondering if this is a good time to cut those two limbs off.
Yes.
Yes, I was going to say. Yeah. We were looking
Brian.
At each other about
Brian
who's going to answer
one.
This.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
it should be a relatively good time. In general, for most trees, I recommend winter pruning. The big issues that I tend to worry about are transmitting diseases, and the big one on apples and crab apples would be fire blight. And I think it's better that it's a bacterial disease, and I think you're better off probably if you have the option of pruning in the wintertime, you're probably going to be better off. If you need to prune during the growing season, you need to wait to periods when it's very, very dry, because this organism will tend to be moved around and tends to be more likely to infect when it is wet through the pruning process.
And if these have spiked up and overgrown the rest of the tree, they're anomalies in the tree, and get rid of them. And you have the ability with your saw and pruner to keep them under control. We like plants that stay under control slightly, so I would say go for it, take them out.
And my same comments as before about decontaminating tools before and after you do the pruning. I think that's always a good thing to do anytime you're cutting materials off of plants.
There you go.
Okay. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234. Brian, this time of the year at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, probably you're not seeing as many as you do in the month of August.
Certainly our slower period for samples, but what I do a lot of this year is give talks. So, I had one yesterday in Green Bay. I'm going to the Dells on Monday, and then we have, Bristol, Waukesha, and Sheboygan the following week. Then Garden Expo hits, and then I have talks in Oconomowoc and Chippewa Falls. I'm all over the place in this.
And I have to say, for anybody out there, if you see Brian listed as a speaker for this, go because he does a fantastic job of making diseases interesting.
Otherwise,
you can kind of glaze over when people are talking about them, but Brian makes it fun.
I have a very weird sense of humor, and I think that's very important, because otherwise I think I put people to sleep, or quite frankly, people have told me I should have grief counselors in the back of the room after my talks, because I make the world look so horrible. But I do joke a lot about it, but I am very, I don't know if the word is passionate. I like to plant diseases. I think they're cool. Mm-hmm. But I also like to help people not have them as well. That's part of my job, is to help you not have problems. If you are interested in seeing where I'm giving talks, if you go to my clinic website, which is pddc.wisc.edu, there's an outreach tab which will get you to a calendar, and you can look up by month where I'm going to be. And I add to that all the time, because I'm scheduling talks all the time.
We'll put that up on our Facebook page. Brianne will get that up there, and we'll post it. And you and I and Lisa Johnson will be at Garden Expo. I mean, you'll be there all the time.
Yeah, I'll be out there all 3 days.
But the three of us will be talking Saturday morning at 9:30.
That's right.
That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
So looking forward to that. That's February 13th.
That's correct.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Garden Expo starts the 12th through the 14th.
And Liz, you get all over the country almost with your business.
I do. I'm like a rash. I show up all over the place unexpectedly. Yeah, but I will be up at Garden Expo. Brian tolerates me in the booth here and there, and so I'll be there on, what days am I going to be there?
Friday and Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I wander in and out. When he's not there, I'll be there or whatever. Yeah, again, like a rash, but yeah.
And how do people get a hold of you?
They... Usually they get referred to me. Otherwise, they go to the website. I'm horrible at updating my website. I apologize for that ahead of time, but it has contact info on it, so you can get a hold of me by email or phone or what have you.
There we go. The Garden Hoe is the website. And we have that posted up on our Facebook page, I'm sure. Let's go to Sarah in Madison next. Sarah, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. I had an orchid sent to me in November. It was beautiful. It had no instructions with it. And it now, or rather 2 weeks ago, it started not doing well at all. The buds wouldn't open. They just dried up. And it looks pretty pathetic now. I wonder what I did wrong or what I should have done.
Did you get it in town?
It was sent to me.
Okay.
A couple of things that I can think of. I'm not a super big...
I'm not very good on orchids.
Expert
either.
On, although I'm supposedly giving a talk for the Orchid Society of Wisconsin.
Well, they don't want orchids. They want diseases. Yeah. They don't want to talk about orchids.
One of the things I would worry about, I would check the root system to see whether you see any browning. Orchids oftentimes have problems with root rot. And so that could be inhibiting water uptake, which could lead to the buds drying up. The other thing I would check, do you have it on some... Liz talked earlier about putting a plant on a tray of rocks for humidity with water in it for humidity. You might want to do that to keep the humidity up as well.
I did spray around it.
Well, this...
You need it more continual than that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. How often do you water?
Once a week.
Okay,
of a cup is what I heard from a friend.
Okay, I would feel that. Do you have it in soil or is it in kind of a bark mulch?
Sorry?
Is it in a soil of some type or is it kind of in a loose bark mulch? What are you growing it in?
Whatever it came in?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's in a plastic thing that I have the vase. Over that. The roots grow up.
That's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, and you know, really, with orchids, my mother does a beautiful job with orchids, so I don't have to. I've never done anything with them, but I do know that you don't water them frequently, and you know they do need to be repotted. But with the buds drying out, I suspect that there's not enough air moisture because they do grow in humid areas.
Right.
But my suggestion would be, is there a fact sheet on orchids?
We do have a fact sheet on orchids. If you go to my clinic website, can you get online?
I can have someone get online.
Okay.
Oh, excellent.
Go to my clinic website, which I mentioned before, and it's on Larry's website. And there's a fact sheet section, and we have one on orchids, which talks about growing orchids. The other person I'm going to refer you to, because you're in the Madison area here, is Lisa Johnson at Dane County Extension, and her number is 608-224-3715. She's very knowledgeable about all aspects of horticulture, and she should be able to give you some more details as well on how to keep that healthy. So I would suggest giving her a call.
Okay, 608-224-3715.
And you can tell her that Brian told you to call
Brian
her.
Sent me.
I've known Lisa since high school, so we know each other quite well.
Thanks, Sarah, for calling. Appreciate it. And we have Bob in Eau Claire next. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. How are you all?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, excuse me. I've called in once before about this tree, and now that we've got the pathologist right there where we can talk to him. I have got a catalpa tree. The catalpa was planted in the summer of 07 when we moved to Eau Claire.
Okay.
And we've got it kind of like anchored at the corner of our garage. Excuse me. For shade, and we chose the catalpa because we wanted a fast-growing tree that would produce shade for the house. And for the next several years through the summer of 2014, it grew marvelously. It was always a late leafer and late bloomer. sometimes the leaves, you know, they'd be out on other catalpas in the Eau Claire area. They'd have their leaves out at the end of May. This tree would not start pushing leaves out until June. And frequently, we didn't have the flowers until around the 4th of July.
So what's the problem with it now?
Last year, it hardly had any leaves at all. And it had like three flowers.
Okay. I can think of a couple things mm-hmm. that might be an issue. One could be some carryover issues from our lovely winter of 2013-14. Mm-hmm. That was really tough on a lot of trees. There could have been some cold injury to that tree.
And 14-15.
And 14-15 contributed as well. And then the other thing is there is a fungal disease called verticillium wilt that's very common on catalpa. That is a fatal disease that will kill the tree. But usually what you see with that in terms of it not leafing is kind of a section of the tree initially that won't leaf out, and then that'll kind of spread over the tree as the disease progresses. How much of the tree has leaves on it at this point?
Well, none right now.
I'm sorry.
During the growing season.
Yeah, during the growing season. I would say that we had maybe five branches that had leaves. And the leaves that were out, some of them were normal, healthy-looking leaves, but for the most part, they were malformed or... They didn't look healthy at all.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, I'm wondering, at this point, with that little foliage on the tree, I think mm-hmm. replacement is probably a better option for you than trying to baby this tree along.
Especially if it's something that's kind of primary to the look of your residence and what you want to get from it. Catalpas can rebound slightly if it's not verticillium, and even if it has verticillium, but you'll get this like puny, pathetic-looking thing for a bunch of years, and it's mm-hmm. just not worth it. And if that's something that you like, I don't know without having it sent up to the lab that I would replant a catalpa tree. And actually in spring, I would say to send you samples so that you can tell if it's got vert.
Right. One other question for you. You said it was at the corner of a garage. Is there a downspout right next to the tree?
There is a downspout that drains right out on top of it. Yes.
Yeah. Then I'm worried about root rot issues. Yeah. That could be the other thing. So if you, I think replacement is probably. I wouldn't even bother sending me a sample. I think replacement at this point, and then you need to redirect that water, whatever you plant there, redirect that water somehow so it does not collect around
the downspout.
It doesn't collect around that tree because
or find a tree that actually tolerates that type of moisture coming on top of it. Mm-hmm. You know, which are far and few in between.
Yeah. I think redirecting the water will probably be a better option. Yeah. But I would not, even with that, I would not replant a catalpa in that area.
No. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Bob. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at your garden, we're looking at everything. Trees and shrubs. We're looking at disease. We're looking at pruning with our two guests, Brian Huddleston and Liz Freemuth. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my two guests, Liz Freemuth, who is the proprietor of the Garden Hole. She does concierge horticultural services. Brian Huddleston directs the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW. And it's always great to have them with us. We have many calls and we've got emails. Mike in Algoma emailed about his 50-year-old black walnut tree that has wounds at the bottom of the trunk, assumes that it's a result of the roots dying. The tree is mulched, so it's not from mower damage. The tree seems healthy otherwise.
Yeah, there could be fungal infections coming up through the root system on that particular tree. We can have certain soil-borne fungi that will infect through the roots and move up into the trunk. My major concern would be how much damage there is. There could be wood rot fungi in the base of that tree, which are decaying the wood and could make it more prone to falling over in a high wind. So I think my advice would be to have a certified arborist come out and take a look at the tree and evaluate it for its potential hazardous characteristics. And the way to do that, and we have another person I see who wrote in wanting information on how to find an arborist. So what I would go would be to go to the Wisconsin Arborist Association website And that's www.waa-isa.org, or you can just search on Wisconsin Arborist Association. There's a searchable section in that website, how to hire a certified arborist. You just click on that. You can indicate your county, and then there's some boxes you can check on what kind of services you want, and then it will find folks who provide service who are certified in your county.
And, you know, really take time to look through the list and meet people, because
I agree.
It's like finding a doctor.
I totally agree with that.
To find somebody you can communicate with and who has the same, understands your goals and has the same treatment that you're looking for. So don't get discouraged if you talk to one or two before you find what you're looking for.
Yeah. There we go. But you want a certified arborist.
Mm-hmm. We recommend a certified arborist, yes.
I do, too. Yep.
Todd in Rhinelander, thanks. Let's see if I can get you on. There we go. Hi, Todd. Thank you for calling.
My question is a very quick one. I have been growing with mink manure for years and years and years, and now I don't have a supply of mink manure. And I have an abundance of lamb's ear, which is a weed. It's sort of like lamb's ear. At least I think that's what it is. And I was just wondering, first, is there, I know how I can get rid of it, which is constantly be attentive to it, but is there a use for lamb's ear? And second, having this mink manure, now that I don't use any, everything is organic, so I don't put any weed killer or anything else on it. Mm-hmm. Is there something that I can do about that?
As far as the manure issue, you might want to look at mushroom compost, chicken manure, things like that up in your area. That might be a little bit easier to find than some of the other fertilizers. Mink had to have been pretty intense manure. So that
it's been high nitrogen.
For about 10 years, I had probably the best garden around. It
oh,
was
yeah.
Amazing garden. Now I have no, I've still got mink manure in there, and I keep rototilling around and everything, and I still have small amounts that you can see that there's some still left. And wherever that is, everything grows like crazy, especially my broccoli and cauliflower and Brussels sprouts.
Yeah. You may actually try, now up in your area, are you a little bit too far north for cranberries? Because actually decomposted cranberries make a fantastic addition to the soil. And you should be able to find at least some sort of mash up in that area. You might have to make it yourself, but that actually does wonders too. You mix that with some mushroom and some chicken and you'd have a nice manure if you're looking for organic. Other than that, get a couple of minks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And maybe put their cages over the garden. I don't know, so you don't have to do any cleanup. But that really is a declining industry, so I have no idea what to do about that one. And as far as lamb's ear goes, I honestly don't know. I would actually say get a hold of the Herb Society and see if, you know, because there's somebody who knows something about that
lamb's
at the Herb
ear.
Society.
Yeah, or if you can get.
I'm thinking. Are you saying lamb's ear or lamb's quarter?
It could be lamb's quarter. I don't know.
Yeah,
mentioned it.
And that actually might be more edible because lamb's ear, not so much. That's that fuzzy looking stuff. That's
oh,
the
yeah,
common name
fuzzy.
For the that's stachys.
Yeah.
That's a
I would get it identified
that.
First, though.
Exactly.
Because the last thing you want to do is assume it's one thing and then find out it's a poisonous plant after you've eaten it.
Exactly. And just because you know it as lamb's ear or lamb's quarter, that doesn't mean that's actually what it is. Because we get those common names handed down to us from family or friends or what have you. I would take it in and have it ID'd. But also, check with the Herb Society and possibly even check online with Herb Society website. And you may even be able to ID it yourself via pictures. But I would do it that way and then figure it out.
Again, with edible things, I always like to get a more formal identification. You could certainly bring it into your county extension office. You're in Rhinelander, so that's at the airport. Building there in Rhinelander, and then if they don't know what it is, they can certainly get it down to one of our weed specialists here in Madison for an identification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, acres and acres and acres of cranberries up in that area, too.
So,
lots of them.
Hopefully that's a little bit of help. We don't have mink for you, though. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
there you go.
I wish I did.
You know, I actually had 1 year. This is a long time back. I rented a place, an old farmhouse, and the garden, I put a garden in, and it was at the site of the former chicken coop.
Mm-hmm.
And man, oh man, oh man, did I have... garden.
Fabulous, right?
Fabulous garden for a couple of years with that really, really composted chicken manure that was in there.
When you start using things like the cranberry mash and mushrooms, there's some heat when they get rid of that. There's still a little bit of heat from the decomposition process, and so that can actually speed up the growth in spring a little bit. You can't cross that line and take it to too fast and too hot. Same thing with chicken manure. It can be a little too hot, but, you know, somebody has horses. That's also horses, goats, sheep. Those are also good manures to be using.
I have to say, I like my chicken manure slightly composted before it's used because chicken manure is
pungent.
Some of the more pungent stuff I have ever smelled.
Oh yeah, we had a chicken coop on our when I was a kid, and I can remember cleaning the chicken coop as a young guy. And man, that went right to your lungs.
Yeah. Me too. That was my job, too, and I would just as soon use mushroom compost as chicken because that just brings back memories I don't need.
Penny in Green Lake, thanks for calling.
Yeah, when I bought my house 10 years ago, I planted a variety of pines, and the one that I'm having problems with is the white pine. Okay. And I know I had a paper about this, but I've misplaced it. But what's happening is every spring there's a tiny white I guess it's an insect or something that is on the needle of the pine tree. And for the past 5 years, you know, they've recommended that you spray it with oil, some type of an oil. I can't remember what it is. And then you have to spray it in March whenever the temperature is, you know, very restricted, like, and it doesn't freeze at night. The thing is, we've been spraying these trees for about 5 years, and it seems like every year it comes back. Is this going to be an annual thing because they're getting bigger? And is there any other suggestion you can make for what this is? I mean, I know what it is. I just lost the paper. But I'm just saying about the treatment that we're having to do every year.
Seeing this at all on the trunk, or are you just seeing it on the needles?
No, it's just on the needles, and it's probably maybe an eighth of an inch, if that. Yes. And it's just on sporadic needles.
Sounds like scale insect of some kind.
Yeah, it's some kind of a scale.
And what I remember,
cotton scale of some sort. It's not cotton scale, but it's a white. I can picture it, but I'm having an old person moment right now.
It's very tiny.
Yeah.
What I would suggest because.
Are you treating it yourself? Can I ask you? Are you treating it yourself?
Yeah, we spray it every year with, you know, when the weather conditions are correct.
Yeah, and timing is really critical for scale insects because what you're seeing on that needle is a covering that actually protects the small, immature scale insects that are underneath. And so if you don't apply that oil at the appropriate time, you're not going to get good control. My suggestion would be to talk to our insect diagnostician. His name is PJ Leash, and he's on the show every once in a while. But I would give him a call, and he's going to probably hate me for giving his number out on the air, but PJ, business for you. 608-262-6510.
And, you know, the other thing I would recommend after you talk to PJ, when you're looking at doing treating, we like to do a lot of things ourselves, but it might be worth it. You've been doing it for 5 years. It may actually be worth getting a certified arborist in there to do the treatment. You might not be reaching high up enough with good coverage on the product to actually get all of them under control, which means then you've got these populations repopulating the rest of the tree. Whereas if you get a professional in there with higher intensity equipment, they can get all of those, and that may be enough to take care of it. It's not something you should have to do every year. It really isn't.
And Phil Pelletieri, I think, is on the show next week. He's actually coming back for a week.
I haven't seen Phil in so long. I miss him.
Yeah, so he's going to be on. So he could definitely, you could call back and talk to Phil as well, Penny. I'm sure of that.
But, you know, I cannot stress enough that getting somebody in with the proper equipment may give it that boost to actually get it under control, too, once you've properly identified it.
Well, and the other question is how serious it is, because it could be that you're below the threshold where you really need to be concerned about it that much.
It's annoying, and the things become a mission. You have to get rid of them. They become a mission, but,
There you go, Penny. Thanks. Rose in Glenwood, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. I have two questions if you have time. The first is about a clethra that I'd like to see more blossoms on, and then I'd like a recommendation to maybe try a fig tree that I could have outside in the summer and bring into the house in the winter.
Oh, if it's in and out, you can get any fig tree you want. Go for it, because you're not worried about overwintering. So pick out a fig, some type of fig that you like, and you're going to be growing it basically as a house plant. There is like a brown turkey or something like that that is marginal for zone 4 or 5. You might want to put it with a little bit of protection, and you can get those generally at Jung's or, you know, some catalog. As far as getting more from a clethra, they are not particularly floriferous. So what you have... Yeah, you can do a little bit of flowering shrub fertilizer, but that's going to be about what you get. It's not a heavy flowering shrub. You might actually want to try an abelia. There's an Abelia mosaniensis that is phenomenal with flowering, and it's good up to zone 4. I've had good luck with it.
Abelia, is it?
Abelia, yeah. And typically it's a down south flower, but it's A-B-E-L-I-A mosaniensis. You can find it rarely, but people can order it. I get it from wholesale places. Flowers beautifully.
All right. Well, the clethra scent is so nice.
Yeah, it is. But you kind of get what you get, and until that plant actually develops an awful lot of branches on it, there's still very small, kind of delicate racemes of flowers. So it's not hugely floriferous.
Yeah.
First, I don't really feel like ripping it out.
Okay. Just add another one to it. Don't rip it out.
Nah, just add another one.
Add another one.
And thank you. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Sometimes it's those plants that smell so good, they don't look as good.
Yeah, you get one thing, you might not get everything. So yeah,
there you go. Oh, man, it's always great to have Liz Freemuth and Brian Huddleston with us. Liz provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hole. And Brian directs the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the Department of Plant Pathology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. They're both happy to be here for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with a couple of old friends, Liz Freemuth, who is... has a horticultural services business. It's called The Garden Hole. Brian Huddleston directs the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. Always great to have them along. Certainly, if you have a question for them, it might be plant disease. It might have to do with, oh my gosh, almost anything. Pretty much we can handle almost anything at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And Brody, I'm speaking of Facebook, I had said, hey, if you got a photo, send it in and with a question. So Brody sent a photo of his winter banana apple tree. So that must be the name of the apple variety.
Yeah, I've never heard of that variety before.
Probably me either, but there's so many. Yeah, there's thousands upon thousands.
It died, apparently, and he's wondering what killed it, and there's some fungus on it.
Yeah, it's this very flaky-looking fungus, and from what I can see in the photo, it looks like something that's called the milky white tooth polypore. That's a mouthful. It's a very opportunistic fungus, so likely what happened was that there was some other sort of damage to that particular branch. My guess would be probably some cold injury, maybe.
Yeah.
Or it could have come in through a pruning cut that maybe was not done quite properly, but my guess would be probably some cold injury. And it is a wood rot fungus, and it can cause additional problems in the branch, but there was something else that happened before that fungus ever got established. What you do with that particular fungus, if you see it, is simply go down about 4 to 6 inches below where you see any of the obvious fungus and prune it out. And that's a very large branch.
Yeah.
It looks like that's on. So it's a fairly major branch that's going to be coming off of that tree. But that's about the only way you can get rid of those wood rot fungi is by pruning.
Yeah, you wonder if it wasn't cold. Something, mm-hmm. any tree with a banana in the name of the fruit.
May not have been quite as cold tolerant as we would like to have been.
When I look at the damage on the picture, there's a definite pattern as you look.
Yeah.
look at this that it to me almost looks like, and we can't tell how big this branch is from the picture, but it almost
looks big.
It does look big. As it was, if that got damaged by cicadas, you know, a number of years ago when we had the last major cicada infestation, that's often what it looks like where they lay their eggs. And the trees actually rebound, but there's definitely some weakness. So all it takes is a little bit, and there you go. But
you
that
go.
Patterning actually looks like where how the cicadas lay their eggs.
Fungi love to come in through wounds. So anytime you're wounding a plant, that's a potential entry point for the disease organisms that I deal with.
And these lay eggs in a line, so it gave plenty of entrance points.
Indeed. Yeah. Yes,
yeah. Well, Joan in Madison has a question for us.
Yeah, I have a question regarding, we have a 35-year-old ash tree. It's beautiful right now. But I'd like to, I picked up a card from the UW Extension about treatment. And I think I could probably treat it. But do you need to treat it 12 months out of the year?
No, it's usually, I'm not an expert on insects by any shape or form, but definitely it's not a multiple treatment per year. It's usually a single treatment, usually in those last two or more years, depending upon the product that you use. And there are a variety of products that are potentially available. Do you have access to the internet?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I would go to my website again in our fact sheet section. We have a couple of really nice fact sheets that were prepared by Chris Williamson and PJ Leash, and Phil Pelletier may have been involved with these as well. But there's one on there that basically helps you assess whether or not you should be treating your tree. It sounds like in your case, you probably have a tree that's
a good preventative candidate.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the other one is how to treat as a homeowner. It gives you the name of the products and the active ingredients, talks a little bit of how they act, and gives you an indication of when to apply them and that sort of thing. And then if you don't want to do it yourself, you can have a certified arborist come in and do it. There's another fact sheet that's designed specifically for the certified arborist because they have a slightly different arsenal of products that they can use.
Mm-hmm. But I recommend that you look at those fact sheets, even if you're going to hire an arborist.
So you're familiar
Get yourself familiar so that you understand what they're talking about. And, you know, if it's a large tree and an old tree, you may be better off having someone else treated with the appropriate equipment and product.
Yeah.
But
you get into amounts, how much of the product.
Exactly.
Right.
So a professional
And you want to be careful with water. Yeah, with all of our water, that you don't want to over apply product and things like that. So those are all things to consider.
And you need the timing correct so you get good uptake of the material throughout and spread throughout the tree. So definitely a little bit of research. And again, if Phil's going to be on next week, this would be another question that would be right up his alley if you'd like to give him a call as well. Or I gave out PJ's number before. He actually did a lot of work on emerald ash borer, so he'd be a great resource as well.
I know their materials is either a year or 2 years. There might even be a 3 year, every 3 years.
Well, the last I heard from Chris Williamson, who does research on this, is the products that they were applying were technically to be applied every 2 years, but they had some research plots where they had treated trees where they seemed to be continuing to get control even five years out.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of the products you can do every other year, you might be able to stretch that out a little bit more.
And you do want to be careful as a homeowner applying that you're aware of any issues that are going to come up with resistance. You don't want to breed resistance into the pests that are attacking your tree. So appropriate application is key.
And also just safety from a homeowner standpoint to make sure you apply it in a manner that's safe so that you don't get exposed to these chemicals in a way that you don't want to be.
There you go. Thanks, Joan, for calling. Appreciate it. On to Jim and Mequon next. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry.
Well, yes. What's on your mind?
I have two questions today, both related to my yard here in Mequon. We own an acre lot, and the back, about one quarter acre, lies in a kind of a drainage area. It's considered a floodplain. There's a ditch that runs through the area, and it probably floods 3 to 4 times a year whenever we get heavy rains. It's now populated by a pretty dense stand of mature ash trees, and these have been there a while. They're probably 50 to 90 feet high. Most of them are still pretty healthy, but the area is fully shaded, and at this point, I'm aware of the emerald ash situation. I'm not really interested in treating them. I have two questions for that area. Number one, is there any species of tree that I could plant right now that would eventually replace these ash trees if they do die that would survive in that shady area? And secondly, is there any ground cover wildflower that I might be able to plant in that same area that would dress things up and survive in that area?
As far as a replacement tree, you're not going to get the same canopy cover from a Kentucky coffee tree, but a Kentucky coffee tree actually does a beautiful job of rebounding from periodic flooding. It has an interesting canopy, but it's more of a dappled shade than it is that solid shade that you get from ash. But a tough tree. It actually does very well. We've had good luck planting that along pond areas where it gets flooding here and there, and they do really quite well.
And that's a tree Laura Jahl, our woody ornamental specialist, I know has mentioned many times that she really likes.
And if it's in a back area, you don't even really have to worry about whether it's producing pods that are annoying or not. They don't annoy me. Some people are a little bit more tidy in their yards and they don't like the pods falling, but there are sterile selections that you can put in. Also in an area that's shady, if you want to go with something a little shorter to add interest, if you're looking at shrubs, elderberries actually do very well, whether it's dry or whether it's wet. And if you don't really care so much about the fruit, then, you know, sun is not that much of an issue, but they tolerate shade beautifully.
And if you grow some sedges with those, you'll get one of my favorite diseases.
Oh, it's a rust. It's a beautiful rust.
It's called a rust disease. It looks like these huge yellow banana slugs growing up the branches of your elderberry. It's very, very cool.
Love it.
Sorry about that, but I just had to say that.
Yeah. Okay. As far as ground cover for an area like that, if you're looking for shady ground cover, boy, I would just go into the garden center and see what trips your trigger, as long as it's shady and wet. You know, the sedges, actually, there are a lot of sedges that do beautifully, and you can get those rust things that are gorgeous. But as far as adding,
I would look at rain garden plants.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, just look at something that's going to tolerate the moisture.
Yeah, the issue will be the shade, I think, in terms of...
And there are really quite a few. You know, there's ferns there. If you want something that's really going to look more woodsy, you can go with ferns, and you can actually add Jack in the Pulpits and things like that in there. If you want flowers, there are some beautiful ones that tolerate.
Yeah, if you have areas that are fairly wet and maybe a little bit more sun in amongst where you have your trees, you might try marsh marigold.
That's a very
early yellow flowered plant. Mm-hmm. It's quite attractive.
And actually, grass wise, what tolerates, it's one of my favorite grasses ever. It's Heikana Kloa, which is the Japanese forest grass. It actually likes moisture. It doesn't like standing water, but if it's periodic moisture, it will tolerate it beautifully. And it is a non-invasive, very beautiful weepy grass that you can get in kind of a yellowy gold sort of color in a green. It's absolutely fantastic.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling, Jim. Appreciate it. Ben in Madison, your turn. Hi, Ben.
Hey, I have a question about indoor plant that I'm growing. It's a ZZ plant. I believe the full name is Zamicolis. It's kind of a, I think it's kind of a popular succulent indoor plant there, you know. So it was doing really well for the longest time in my office. No windows, no natural light. But it's kind of started to take a turn for the worse recently. And the only thing that's really changed is the lighting in our office has gone all LED.
Okay.
Does that have any effect?
Yes. Yes, it does. It does have an effect. If you've changed the lighting to LED, I mean, actually, I use LEDs for artificial light during the winter for the plants that I bring into the house. Typically, I'll use a red and a blue that will give me a good spectrum for what I need. But if it does give off a little bit more light. But the question I have for you is, if it's a succulent, have you checked the roots to make sure you're not overwatering?
I have not.
Yeah, check the base of the plant, because if it's a succulent and you're overwatering, you've probably set it up for a root rot problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you,
I've had it for a couple of years, and I've been watering it the same the whole time.
Okay.
Typically, I beat the plant a little bit as well to, you know, simulate the wind, you know, and that always helped it. But now I can check the roots. I mean, what do I look for?
Check it.
Browning, and have you repotted it in that 2-year period?
I have not. It was pretty big pot to begin with.
Okay. I would actually say repot it. Pull it out and get a new pot for it if it's not clay. that you can disinfect. If it's a plastic pot, just to be on the safe side, I would repot it. You're looking for roots that don't look well, that look kind
soft,
of
soft, brown,
smelly. Oftentimes, yeah. I've noticed with tropical plants in office situations, when they go south really stinky, especially if, you know, if they're not being well drained.
And what are you watering it with? Just tap water?
Straight up.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. A couple of things there. I would let it set out for a while to let any of the chlorine kind of percolate out. And then the other thing I worry about if you've not transplanted it recently is that you can get salt buildup from the water. And that can actually, if you get high enough concentration of salt in the soil, and we're not talking like table salt, but just there are a variety of things that
are salts in the water.
Salts in the water. That can actually damage the roots as well over time.
Interesting.
And that actually, even just flushing the soil does wonders if you've got a salt buildup. But you generally see that on the top of surface.
Transplanting would be a good idea. Yeah. Remove the old soil. Trim off any of the brown roots that you see. Make sure you don't put it in too large of a pot. Because you put a small plant in a huge pot, you water it, the soil stays wet too long. Mm-hmm. And then again, you set yourself up for root rot problems.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you don't think the lights alone could be causing this? You think it could be, it's likely something else?
You know, it might be a combination. And once you weaken that plant, whether it's changing the light situation or changing the watering technique, whatever it would happen to be, that actually can set it up to fail, whereas before it was resisting failure because it was healthy enough. So it might have just been the straw that started the camel back breaking. And it's hard to say because I haven't seen the plant.
And we were both scratching our head as to what this plant exactly is. So we're talking in generalities.
In generalities, because we don't know what a ZZ plant is. But as far as tropicals and house plants, that's what we're giving you.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks a lot for
calling. Send us a picture.
Yeah, I'd like to see a photo of it. Mm-hmm. We'd probably be able to identify it pretty quickly.
Exactly.
If we had a photo. So put it up on our Facebook page, Ben. Appreciate the call. And Steve in Milwaukee up next. Hi, Steve.
Hi, I've been calling about a yellow magnolia. It's about 20 feet tall, and I need some trimming directions. It's got three stems that are about 4 inches, and two that are probably 2 inches.
Okay, and why are you wanting to trim it? Let me ask you that. Is there something that's rubbing? Is it dying? Is it getting out of hand? What's your goal?
It's getting out of hand. It's at the hitting the building.
Okay. Okay. I would say, as we said earlier to one of the previous magnolia callers, I would wait until after it blooms, just because why not? And yellow magnolias, when they're in bloom, are absolutely gorgeous. At that point, I take a look always when I'm pruning. You know, if you're going to start this process, do it properly. And that's take a step back and look at, are the branches crossing? Is anything rubbing? Is anything dead? Those are the ones you take out first. Then you can start trimming back. If it's too close to the house now, you know, again, without seeing it, it's a little bit difficult, but you may actually be better off to take off one of those whole side stems as opposed to just trying to keep one branch cut back all the time. Is he still on or not?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
How much of it is rubbing on the building?
Oh, it's just getting close to the building.
Okay, just getting close. Okay.
Nip it in the bud, so to speak.
Yeah, so you're really looking at overall shape. You know, it's a pretty good-sized magnolia, so you're looking at overall shape. So just start again with diseased, dead, crossing, and, you know, again with Brian's recommendations with cleanliness.
Right, definitely decontaminate tools routinely as you're cutting those branches, particularly if you're cutting off a dead branch, because that might have died from some sort of fungal disease, and so you want to use some alcohol. Rubbing alcohol will work, or get a can of spray disinfectant to spray your tools with. The other thing I'd be very cautious, since you're going to be doing this during the growing season, is definitely do it in a period after flowering when it's relatively dry, not when it's rainy or wet. because you want to make sure that you keep things as dry as possible. Wet conditions are great for fungi to infect plants.
And I absolutely think that pruning, especially when it's for a really showy tree, is something that you take your time with. When you're doing it yourself, you take your time. And that generally, for Wisconsin people, includes a beverage of choice. And so you get your little table set up with your beverage and your alcohol. They might be one and the same, whatever. And then do it slowly and take a step back after you make your cut so that you can see where is my next cut going to come from so that you don't over prune.
Yeah. And also make sure, think about the fact that you don't necessarily have to do this all this year. It can be
exactly.
a process that's done mm-hmm. over several years to get it in exactly the shape that you want it to be in.
And they will train. Things are trainable. So, yep. you know, a little bit now and then lead it in a different direction and continue to do that over the next few years, definitely.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And some, we should take care of some online questions. We have Jennifer emailed that rabbits ate most or almost all the body of a rhododendron bush she planted this fall. Is it going to die? Well, it sounds like it if it's shaded all off. But how do you protect your shrubs and baby trees from hungry rabbits? Well,
okay, I'm going to be not politically correct. Get rid of the rabbits. And I've had this discussion with Scott Craven a number of times, and I have tried many, many things. I actually had a beautiful tricolor beech in my yard that a couple of years ago when the snow was so high, they sheared off my tricolor beech up about 6 feet because that's where the snowbank was, and it's now just starting to come back. I tried everything to try and keep them off. I tried every spray. I tried everything. But the only thing you can do is fence it. Even at that, you know, they can go under if they're really, really determined.
Or if you get snow, as you said, it'll be above the fence.
Exactly, and they'll go over the top. So, you know, this was typically a tree that they didn't bother. It was a beech tree. It had a huge trunk on it. You have to kind of keep on it. And, you know, if you can trap rabbits or if you have somebody who wants to trap them and get rid of them, live trap them, whatever you want to do. Whether the rhododendron will live or not depends on how much of it was taken out. If there were any growth points, it may come back. I would do a wait and see.
Okay. Don wonders, he has a purple leaf plum, wonders how extensively he can and should prune it back. It's very sparse, low to mid, but very full at the top.
Yeah, if it's a purple leaf plum, like a sand plum, you can actually prune those too hard, and then you end up with three branches, and that's about it. To me, unless it's something, that plant is replaceable to me. So in my opinion, go ahead and give it a whack because it's an inexpensive shrub. If you did too far, you can go and buy a new one, unless it has some sort of special meaning to you. But you can prune it back. I would do the side branches, not the main trunk.
And Julian Hollister has six white pines that infected with blister rust, white pine blister rust. They were planted about 10 years ago. Do we have a small-scale treatment suggestion for it, Brian?
Yeah, about the only thing you can do for white pine blister rust, if it's on small branches, is to prune them out. Definitely 4 to 6 inches below where you see the kind of roughened bark, or if in the springtime you'll see these actual creamy white balloon-like structures that'll pop through the bark. The other thing you definitely want to look for in the area are gooseberries mm-hmm. or currants, because that fungus spends part of its life on white pine and part of it on currants and gooseberries. And if you have, and the spores that infect the white pine come from the currants and gooseberries, mm-hmm. so you've got to eliminate those. If you've got an infection on a main trunk, remove the tree. There's nothing you can do to treat that particular disease if you have a main trunk infection. But the real critical thing is to get rid of the alternate hosts, which are the gooseberries and currants.
So check the fence lines.
Yes.
And in 20 seconds, can you remove a 40-year-old blueberry plant?
Sure, why not?
I would not. I don't know if you would necessarily survive or not. You can move it, yes. I kind of doubt whether you'd probably be able to get to survive very well.
It won't survive in its current state.
And somebody sent that ZZ plant might be a Zanzibar gem.
Oh, if it's a Zanzibar gem, then that might be close to like a ginger of some sort. Those are kind of prone to root rot, I think, if that's the one
so
I'm
maybe
thinking
root
of.
Rot. Yeah. Well, Brian, Liz, thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure. The time flew once again, didn't it?
It's always a lot of fun to be on the show. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Liz Freemuth from her business, The Garden Hoe, and Brian Huddleston from the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. They will be back, I'm sure, and we will do it all over again with them. And Brian and I will be at the Garden Expo.
And Liz, too.
And Liz, too.
I'll be hanging around.
Garden Expo, February 12th through the 14th. So looking forward to that as well. On Monday at this time, we'll learn about perennial crops for biofuels and their potential on marginal farmlands. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.